Best worst case scenario podcast.
Yeah.
It's not Christmas. Definitely. But it feels like it.
Yeah.
Because we got a big present for you guys.
Yes, we do.
First off, it's Mayan.
Second off, it's Dana.
And third off, we've been away for a while. But we're back here again at the podcast studio.
Yeah, coming to you live from the Pacific Northwest.
Not live.
98.1.
But King of. I think you'll enjoy it nonetheless because we're talking about something darker this episode. And so
darker than usual.
Yeah, we cover a lot of dark stuff, but this is different. This isn't Boogeyman in the dark.
This is real.
Ghosts grabbing your butt.
No, real life. This is real life shit.
Fairies tickling your ears.
I could have said
something worse. But
yeah, just keep it PG, man.
This is real life stuff. History. Dark history.
Mystery. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the Axeman of New Orleans.
New Orleans, the city of magic, the city of culture. In the 1900s, New Orleans was a flourishing trading post with tons of different people coming in from all over the world. You had immigrants from Italy, Africa, the Caribbean, and tons of others that I can't think of right now.
All of them.
And at the time, even though slavery was abolished, you had the Jim Crow laws. So there was a lot of tension between all of these different cultures that lived right next to each other, because New Orleans isn't huge, so these people are packed in there like sardines.
Man, can I ask?
Yeah.
Who and what was Jim Crow?
Jim Crow laws were the laws that sort of replaced slavery. So 1864, 65, you have slavery's abolished, right?
Yeah.
But in the South and a lot of other places, they introduced Jim Crow laws, which were these pretty much still slavery, because they were these rules that segregated society, you know, the separate but equal. So people had different drinking fountains, different things that they could do.
Well, that's intense. Thanks for explaining Jim Crow,
right?
Fucking murder of crows.
And also, if that wasn't enough, all of that stuff going on in that city, you have the constant threat of hurricanes and flooding that are just going to wipe out everything. So people were on edge.
It was a dangerous place to live.
Definitely.
Especially if you were black or Italian or anything but a white-blooded American.
Or even white, probably. You know,
even if you were white, it would be dangerous.
Yeah. Just because you have
you have natural disasters going. You got
crime rings. You diseases. Have disease. You got poverty.
But it's just compounded like sevenfold if you're like an immigrant.
Yeah, for sure.
The Axeman of New Orleans was a serial killer, if you people didn't know.
Who are you calling you people?
I mean,
Dana?
Our listeners, man. Uh-huh. Nothing more than you people. Serial killer in America, in New Orleans, obviously. It's part of his name. Louisiana. Between May 1918 and October 1919, allegedly, he killed 6 people and left another 6 severely injured. Unfortunately, the Axeman was never identified. Pretty much like the Bigfoot with an axe of New Orleans.
That's scarier.
Isn't it?
Like a Bigfoot with an axe. I'm just thinking about that, man.
So these victims were normally attacked with an axe. I need to realize I'm not going to be Louisiana the whole time.
Yeah. Settle down. Well, you'll get
real annoying.
Settle down.
Right now, right here. It was an axe, sometimes a razor, that this axe man used to attack the victims. And it's the way he sort of entered into these victims' homes was done mostly by removing a panel on the back of the house. And these houses that some of these immigrants lived in were like really like terrible construction. So it was pretty easy. You could probably almost take like a fucking straight razor and cut your way through the back.
just like cardboard.
Straight up cardboard and plastic, man. Just fucked
just
up.
Just a cardboard box he lived in. Yeah.
But he'd like use a chisel to just like chip his way in there while they're all sleeping. I don't know what they're taking to just sleep through that shit. But
it was noisy, man. People playing jazz outside. You can't hear shit with those trumpets going off.
Yeah, it's true. And many victims were asleep when the axe man attacked. And what made these cases perplexing to authorities is that nothing was ever stolen from the victims or their homes.
Yeah, but he would ransack the place, if I'm not mistaken. Like
he would.
He'd make it look like he... I don't know if he was like trying to like be a genius and he was like, I'm going to make them think it was a robbery.
Yeah.
For a robbery, so I'm going to ransack the place.
I think that's exactly what he...
But then not even take anything. It's like, well...
I think he would like open up their purses and wallets and just leave them full of money. But I don't know. Like, he used, you know, sharp objects. What's kind of scary or creepy to me is that he usually used victims' own weapons on them. So...
Yeah, so if you're Asian and you have chopsticks, man, tough luck.
Well, fuck. That's messy, man. Like, probably eye gouging with those.
Yeah, but that is scary. So he'd use their own weapons against
them. Yeah, like razors or axes or... anything sharp, so...
That kind of makes sense, though, because if you think about it, New Orleans was such a packed city that if this guy's walking around with an axe, people are going to, like, see him, especially as his killings kicked off. You know, people are going to be like, holy shit, I saw a guy carrying an axe. So he almost had to use whatever he found inside.
He was a man of ingenuity.
Ingenuity. He adapted. But, he overcame.
Yeah, I know. If I was like a fucking like elderly person or something living in those days, like I'd definitely get rid of all my sharp stuff in the house. My tools, my kitchen knives, my dentures, man. Like just anything that could like chomp down on me or stab me. Wow. I'd just be living in a bubble.
Well, I'm glad you're not an old New Orleanian man in the 1900s.
That Axeman wouldn't be able to kill me. But like... basically, the profile of the Axeman, or what surviving victims described him as, was a large man, mulatto-skinned, which basically means he appeared to be African and European mixed. He was estimated to be a working-class man, and those types of people then weren't very literate. Like, I mean, it wasn't common, still isn't common, for a working-class man to be literate.
Well, first, let's... one thing I want to mention is that all of these victims are Italian, and it's hypothesized that this guy had some major beef with Italians, and almost all of the Italians in New Orleans seem to own grocery stores. Like, I don't know what it was, but...
it's kind of like how all the Middle Easterns drive taxis.
Right. It's like the thing you do, you know? And one thing I do want to say is that during the early 1800s,
I'm listening.
I don't know what I want to say.
Wow, you saying?
The early 1900s, Italian immigrants in New Orleans made a big part of the community. And they mainly settled in the French Quarter around the riverfront area.
Right.
And
right.
Most of these immigrants came from southern Italy. About 80% of them were Sicilian.
Screaming Sicilians.
And so by 1900, New Orleans had the largest population of Italians in the South, around 20,000 people.
Wow.
And so most of these people found work in various industries like fishing, shipping, in the import-export trade.
Panhandling.
But a lot of them worked as laborers on docks or in factories because they were trying to save up money to start their own grocery stores. That was like...
they were trying to take over the U.S.
That was grocery store. Well, they did. It's funny you say that because Italian grocery stores in New Orleans made up only 7% of grocery stores in 1880. By 1900, 19% were Italian-owned. And by 1920, they ran half of all groceries in the city.
Jesus Christ.
So they fucking took over.
So we had to, like, you know, put a stop to that.
This was before big grocery stores. So how it worked back in the day is you'd have corner grocery stores.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Like, literally, they'd be neighbors, and each one would have a grocery store. Probably more like, think stalls at like a farmer's market.
And a lot more competition.
But someone's house.
Way more competition.
So the reason I say this is because, to give you some backstory about all of these victims that I'm about to discuss for you guys, are Italian and of Italian descent, and a lot of these people own grocery stores.
All of them were Italian?
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's a big connection idea.
Yeah, you could say it's a pattern, for sure.
Or there was just that many Italians in New Orleans that it didn't, you know, wasn't a coincidence.
I think it definitely was not a coincidence.
Okay.
Joseph and Catherine Maggio. Date, May 23rd, 1918. Location, Upper Lyon Street. The Maggio couple lived above a grocery store in an apartment. They were sleeping when they were attacked in the early hours of the morning. Both their throats were slit with a straight razor before they were bludgeoned in the head with an axe. Law enforcement found bloody clothes of the killer as he changed into clean ones before fleeing the scene. Catherine initially survived the attack, but succumbed to her injuries shortly after. The investigation led to a few people being questioned, but it didn't go anywhere because of a lack of evidence. And that is the first murder.
Did they both die?
No.
Who survived?
Oh, you know what? I think he might have died too. I think maybe she survived, but then she died too.
They both died.
Yeah.
He died, she died, and then he died later.
No, opposite.
Okay, though that's impressive that one of them almost survived, but they didn't get any details on the fucker.
No witnesses.
And when did that happen?
That was May 23rd, 1918. And then about a month later,
oh, geez.
On June 27th, 1918, we have Lois Besumer and Harriet Lowe. Location, corner of Dorgenois and La Harpe Streets.
You should have looked at the pronunciation of these.
I should have.
You motherfucker. Man.
Dude, you know what? French words are tough. So, a little more than a month later, Lois Besumer, a grocer, and his mistress, Harriet Lowe.
Damn.
What?
Another grocer.
Yeah, pretty much all these people are grocers. So they were sleeping at the back of their grocery store. I think they were just sleeping.
They were sleeping in the back of their grocery store? Oh my God.
Yeah, a lot of people use their homes as a grocery store.
Just picture them like sleeping in like the warehouse area, you know, where the plastic little things in the doorways like move around when you walk through it.
I don't think they had those.
Where all the pallets are.
I don't think they had plastic in these days,
okay,
man.
Okay. I'm just saying it sounds rough.
They were both struck repeatedly with an axe, sustaining severe head injuries. When the store didn't open in the morning, they were found lying in a pool of blood. Somehow, both survived the assault, although they were badly wounded. Mrs. Lowe's left side of her face remained paralyzed.
They both survived. Yeah. Axe blows to the head and face while they're sleeping.
Oh, sorry. She survived, and then, oh man, this is sad. So what happened was, she survived, and the left side of her face was paralyzed, and then she died that August, 2 days later, after getting corrective surgery to try to fix it.
So the surgery killed her.
Yeah, but Wow. She wouldn't have gotten that surgery. So,
what do you mean?
I mean, the guy still kind of killed her. Like, she wouldn't have even gotten that surgery if.
I know, but do you think she could have survived if she didn't get that surgery?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
Damn doctors, man. They are no good.
But before she died, she told authorities that she believed Lois Besumer was the one that attacked her. The dude she was sleeping with, who also got whacked in the face with an axe.
Yeah, I think I read something about that, actually. It sounds like she went fucking insane.
And you know what's crazy is he was charged with murder and served 9 months before being acquitted following a 10-minute jury deliberation.
God.
I'm sure they were like, hey, so this guy, like, fucked himself up just to fuck up this lady, too? Like, how? How would he even do that?
God, that's sad, man. Yeah. I wonder if she did that because she's a bitch or because she got brain damage.
I don't know, man. I feel like anything I say is not going to be politically correct in this.
Yeah, I know. So, I kind of did like a checkmate.
You put me in a corner, man.
Put you in a corner there, man.
And I can't get out. So he got released. She died, though, so I guess that's kind of sad.
But he had to spend 9 months in fucking prison.
Yeah. Yeah, which sucks.
I'd be fucking furious. My girlfriend blaming me that I killed her and then she dies. Like, God, that's the worst scenario.
You mean that you attacked her?
Yeah, that I attacked her, that she dies, and then there's nothing.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Oh, God.
So that was on June 27th.
So that was a month later from the initial attacks.
And then...
we doing math right now.
Yeah, I'm counting months.
On his fingers. I'm learning how to do math over here.
So 2 months later, roughly. Anna Schneider, August 5th, 1918. Location, Elmira Street.
Anna Schneider, Italian.
That's my final answer.
Is it?
I don't know, man. I'm sure some of them changed their names, but I'm pretty sure she was. Anna Schneider, 28, who was 8 months pregnant, was attacked in her bedroom late at night.
God damn, man. She's got no fucking...
I know.
Fucking, what's the word? Decency.
Oh, yeah, he's an axe murderer.
I know, but some killers at least have fucking morals, you know?
Yeah.
They have code.
Not this guy. She woke to a dark figure standing over her and was then struck multiple times in the head with an axe. Shortly after midnight, her husband found her when he returned home from work. Despite the savage attack, she was able to give birth to a healthy baby girl 2 days later. So there is...
Wow.
That's the one positive I'm going to take from this whole thing, man.
God damn, that's amazing. I wonder if the baby has trauma after something like that.
I don't know, man.
I bet it does.
I don't know how, but it probably does.
Yeah, that's
scary.
I mean,
babies can feel their mom's, like,
well, kind of like
stress
how,
levels.
How mothers, like, eat and do, like, really dictates how healthy the baby is. If a mother gets attacked, I wouldn't be surprised if it affected the mental health of the kid, the baby, because of that stress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God damn, that's scary. But that's amazing she made it.
Yeah. One person was arrested under suspicion, but again, the lack of evidence led to them being released. By this time, authorities had caught on, with the attacks consistent with the Maggio and Besumer cases. A serial killer was in New Orleans.
So, that last attack on that baby was what day?
On the baby? On the pregnant lady? That was August 5th, 1918. So these are about a month apart, each one, the three ones we've covered.
And it is interesting that, you know, most of the victims were Italian grocers, and then you narrow it down even more, and they were Italian grocer women.
No, there's a lot of men here that were attacked.
No, I know, but I think they were attacked inadvertently. Usually the men were attacked only if they were in the way or with the woman.
Oh my gosh. I think you're right.
So it's interesting.
Dana, you should work for the FBI.
No, I'll just read it.
Could be on Criminal Minds.
I didn't do this myself, man.
Oh, dang.
This is some other criminologist's theories. Because of this, some speculate that the Axeman suggests that killings were sexually motivated, and perhaps the Axeman was somewhat of a sexual sadist.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, I think with criminal profiling, they say that a lot of serial killers and people who commit atrocities like that have sexual perversions that usually go into, like, sadism and stuff like that.
Yeah, like they found pleasure in inflicting pain on other people. And it's just, it's like something in the brain is not wired right. Something is terribly wrong with the brain. And those types of people, I don't think have any cure or help for. So you kind of just have to put them in a prison or a fucking asylum and leave them there or kill them. They're just like bad dogs, you know. You kind of got to put bad, aggressive dogs down.
Got to put the Axeman down.
Put them down. So the Axeman, it's possible the Axeman only killed male victims, you know, who interrupted attempts to murder the women. And this was hypothesized by criminologists Damon and Colin Wilson. And this idea was also supported by cases where the woman of the household was murdered, but not the man. Men were just making more work for him, pretty much.
So only 5 days later, Joseph Romano, an elderly man who lived with his two nieces, was attacked in his home. He was struck with an axe while he slept. His two nieces woke to the commotion and saw the assailant fleeing. Unlike the previous cases, Romano was the only victim in the household, and he succumbed to his injuries 2 days later.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it kind of blows a big fat hole in your theory.
Exactly. Not if Mr. Romano was like sitting on his lazy boy in the living room and like the Axeman had to kill him or had to attack him instead of the girls he was after.
Maybe, but it's kind of interesting because he got him and then they came in to see.
Right.
And then he left.
So this Axeman is kind of like a hit and run type of guy. He doesn't hang around.
No, nothing about what he does really makes sense. And his nieces gave a description of the attacker as a dark skinned, heavy set man who wore a dark suit and a slouched hat. He sounds like a fucking cartoon character, doesn't he?
Well,
a slouched hat.
Well,
a suit and a slouched hat.
That's the description from two young nieces, man.
Yeah. And plus, I'm sure everyone in New Orleans was wearing them suits with slouched hats, man.
I know. He fit right in.
This one in particular spread fear all throughout New Orleans. Police were getting reports from all over of people claiming to have seen the sax man.
The sax man. There it is. That's what I wanted to hear all night fucking long.
Yeah, I'm glad my dyslexia,
like the sax man of helped you, New man. Orleans, that sexy sax. He just playing that jazz everywhere it goes, bringing the family blues to everyone.
Oh,
well, not the family
that's
blues.
Sad. He did bring the family. No,
that's what
blues,
I mean.
Man.
He's bringing the blues to families everywhere.
Yeah, it's fucking a. That's fucked up. That would be funny. If it wasn't so sad, man.
It's true. That's why it's sad.
That was a good joke, but I can't laugh. So, people claiming to have seen the axe, man, or someone climbing a fence, or just an axe, man. People were freaking scared.
Well, the axe, man.
Most started to carry loaded shotguns and even stayed up at night to keep watch on their family.
That's intense.
And it wasn't for some time before any more murders were heard about. But then, March 10th, 1919, happened. And unlike the others, this didn't occur in New Orleans. Charles Cordemilia, location Gretna, town across the Mississippi. Charles, an Italian grocer, lived with his wife Rosie and their 2-year-old daughter. This one's actually really dark. I mean, they're all dark, but this one's, yeah. Screams were heard in the early morning from the Cordemilia residence. Lorlando Giordano, the neighbor grocer, ran over to investigate and saw the aftermath of the attack. Rosie had awoken to see her husband struggling with a large man carrying an axe. Her husband was knocked down, and the killer turned towards Rosie, holding her 2-year-old daughter. Despite her pleas, he turned the axe on the both of them, knocking them over the head. Rosie and her husband survived. Their 2-year-old daughter did not. They were both immediately hospitalized for skull fractures, and it was then that Rosie Cordemilia accused Orlando Giordano and his 18-year-old son named Frank. Wow, he just gets the name Frank.
Wait.
After Orlando Giordano, and his son's name is Frank. I'd be pissed, man. However, Orlando...
Orlando Bloom.
Goddamn. Orlando was 69 years old and in poor health, and his son Frank was apparently too big to fit through the panel in the back door. Frank was too big, man. So, Charles denied his wife's claim, but despite this, both men were found guilty and one was sentenced to hang.
Jesus.
So, following the trial, Charles divorced his wife, probably because she blamed their neighbors.
Yeah, he fucking knew it.
And about a year later, Rosie reversed her claim, saying she had made it out of jealousy and spite.
Oh, so she fucking lied.
And they were released.
God, I bet she said that a couple days before the hanging, too.
But the important thing, it was before the hanging. It wasn't like after the hanging. Like, oh, sorry.
Well, if the hanging had happened, I doubt she would have confessed.
Probably not, because why would you?
Then she'd be put in prison.
I don't know
no,
how.
No, for killing him.
I'm not a lawyer.
No. But we can try to.
Many things, Dana, but as lawyers.
Speculate. It's all we can do. So the fucking axe man killed their 2-year-old daughter?
Yeah.
Do you think it was on purpose, or do you think?
Yeah, because he knocked down the husband and then turned to them, and she was like, no, please don't hurt us. And then he just smashed them both, conk, conk, on the head.
And that's what the child died from, was head trauma.
Well, yeah, they're 2, so, I mean, it probably
was he?
Probably wasn't that much force required, to be honest, with an axe.
So this guy's, like, MO or whatever you call it is just, like...
He dunks on people with an axe,
it's just, like,
tonking
people on the head. Like, he's a fucking cartoon character.
Yeah, but he's not, and there's lots of blood, and it's fucked up, so...
I don't know, I'm just picturing the jazz playing while he's... It's kind of fucked up, man.
So, following this attack, New Orleans was on high alert again. The police said that they believed all the attacks had a common perpetrator, a bloodthirsty maniac filled with a passion for human slaughter.
Oh, lordy. Oh, lordy, lordy.
So,
God, help us.
It was then that the Times-Picayune newspaper...
It's Picayune to you, sir.
What?
It's Picayune.
To me?
Yeah, to
why
you,
me?
Sal.
Why me?
What you pronounce that paper right, son, right now. Don't you fucking...
So the Times-Picayune newspaper received a foreboding letter on March 14th, 1919, the contents of which can be heard now.
Hail. March 13th, 1919. Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me, and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orlanians and you foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but his satanic master. Francis, Joseph, etc. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I don't think there is any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me, as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Orlanians think of me as a most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I am going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose home a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well, then so much the better for you people. One thing is certain is that some of you people who do not jazz it out on that specific Tuesday night, if there be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping that thou wilt publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either in fact or realm of fancy. The Axeman.
Man, that was, I have goosebumps from that. That was amazing.
Did you really?
Yeah. Stop talking like that, man.
I am the Axeman. I will talk like this forever, man.
Not funny, man.
Yeah. It's a pretty long fucking letter, isn't it?
Jesus. Like, it's a book, man.
I feel like if the Axeman, you know, wrote that, he'd have like fucking five words. That is like by a fucking writer.
Yeah.
A writer.
So this was the first thing that proposed a connection between the Axeman and jazz music in New Orleans.
Yeah. Sort of the profile of the Axeman was he was supposedly a working class person, and those types of people weren't literate back then. And so historians and criminologists theorize that the letter wasn't written by the Axeman himself, but possibly someone wrote the letter to achieve their own agenda, likely related to promoting jazz music, which in that case should have been called the sax man, like you were saying.
On accident.
But
so they don't think he wrote the letter.
Yeah.
And they think some jazz asshole.
So
Some jazz hole.
Some
wrote,
jazz.
Some jazz hole wrote the letter.
Like, man, you were on fire tonight. Those puns are on fire. It's possible that, yeah, the letter was written by somebody else.
The first troll ever.
Yeah. My favorite theory is that the Axeman was a hardcore fan of jazz music and killed those who didn't listen to jazz. This idea stems from the letter that he wrote.
That you've just read.
That I have just read to you all. And part of the letter that he talks about at 12:15, remember when I talked about that? People who don't play jazz music will get the axe.
Is when he's going to pass over the...
However, he would spare occupants of any place where a jazz band was playing.
Yeah.
So, on the night of March 18th, all of the city's dance halls were filled to the brim with people and jazz music. They played into the wee hours of the morning. Miraculously, there were no murders that night.
I find that hard to believe.
The Axeman was a man of his word. Wasn't he, Matt?
Or he didn't write that letter. But yeah, I like the idea too of a dude walking around with an axe who just really likes jazz. And if you like jazz too, then you're safe.
Yeah.
But you just gotta be playing that jazz and he'll be like, he's cool. I'm gonna leave him be.
Imagine you're like a house party during that night and it's just like fucking packed. It's kind of like vibing, but not really because the fucking music sucks. The jazz player has never played a note in his life. He's just in there, you know, trying to keep everybody alive.
And you can't leave because you know you're going to get murdered.
Yeah, like old tone deaf Elijah.
Just, hell yeah, rip it up, Elijah.
Yeah,
play that jazz louder.
That sounds real good, Elijah.
Just keep it up all night, man. No, don't stop.
Meanwhile, you've got like a splitting headache and you're just fucking thinking about leaving the party and getting fucking murdered in the streets.
Could happen.
So, going into...
Are we going to dissect this piece of poo letter, man?
No, we're not.
Good.
But it is an interesting letter. Creepy for sure.
It is, and that letter was...
Seems a bit theatric and nerdy, doesn't it? Also, like he's patting himself on the back and...
Oh, yeah.
Trying to ride the whole Axeman persona that the public gave him.
Yeah.
It's like a little too hard. Like you can kind of almost tell that it seems a little phony.
Well, I mean, he could be a narcissist for sure. But the thing that's interesting is the letter was sent in on March 14th. He wrote it on March 13th. And then the previous murder was committed on March 10th, 1919. So 4 days after that, right?
Right.
And then nothing happened for the next 5 months. Man, it takes me so long to count.
No.
I gotta start at January. That's the problem.
I have to too every time. So how long between the letter getting published and the next kill?
Count it again, but I think I said 5 months.
Okay, so that is a little weird because it seems like with this letter, the Axeman would be ramping up.
Unless everyone was so scared, everyone was like sleeping with guns and there was just too much heat, you could say.
Yeah. Also, another reason, it's not just the patting himself on the back, it's the level of grammar and the educated appearance of the letter. And the mention of Tartarus, which is like the Greek underworld.
There's a lot of really like interesting references in here and use of language that seem like someone who's educated, for sure.
And there's a historian called Miriam Davis who wrote The Axeman of New Orleans, The True Story. And she basically says that the writer of the letter of the Axeman doesn't have the same profile. But Davis continues with this theory and narrows in on a jazz musician named Joseph John Davila as the potential letter writer.
Why? How did he narrow on him of all the jazz players?
Well, there's a little suspicion. Now, Davila was a New Orleans jazz musician in the early days of the genre. So the origins of jazz music actually started in New Orleans around 1895. So it was still somewhat of a new thing in the Axeman days. But Davila, the jazz musician, composed a song called The Axeman's Jazz. Don't scare me, Papa. during the early hours of March 19th, 1919, which was the night that all the whole city was having the parties, he composed that song that same night and then came out with it.
Yeah, but everyone knew that the Axeman had written that letter, and that's why all these jazz bands were playing. Everyone knew what was going on.
I know, but it's just a little suspicious that this guy kind of got famous from this song at the same time.
Hmm.
So if you were like a struggling musician and you're like, I'm going to write a letter and talk about the Axeman and promote jazz, and then I'm going to write an Axeman themed song that's going to totally pump up my career.
Yeah. It's really fucked up either way, even if he did write it, you know, like scare everyone like that.
Yeah.
Make everyone think they're going to die.
It's kind of messed up, too, because the cover of the sheet music that the paper published, the Picayune, is a cartoon that shows a family frantically playing jazz music while watching out the door in complete terror.
Wow.
And this was used with his song. We'll post that photo on our social media for you
guys. Yeah, check out our Instagram. What is it?
It's at, our handle is BWCS Podcast, all one word.
Yeah. We'll have more details on it there.
Yeah, but you'll be able to check out that creepy, eerie, funny photo of cartoon family. They're all playing jazz, but they don't want to.
Faster, faster.
Yeah, yeah. I fucking like little Levi's hands just bleeding. His dad just...
little Levi's hands.
His head dad just yelling at him to keep playing or he's gonna die.
You want the Axeman to murder all of us?
Yeah.
You better fucking play.
Lay your nagger time, boy.
So, 5 months later... August 10th, 1919, after the pressures had cooled a little bit, Steve Boca, a grocer, location, South Scott Street.
Boca Burgers.
Man, I feel like they should have just told all the Italian grocery people, like, if you're a grocer and you're Italian,
you're gonna die.
Be ready to try to get murdered.
Or you know? Don't keep an axe in your fucking store either.
Yeah. So he was asleep in his bedroom when he was attacked.
Of course he was. This Axeman's such a pussy, man.
Yeah. Once he regained consciousness, though, and he did, he ran to the home of his neighbor, Frank Janusa, where he, once he got there, he immediately collapsed again. He sustained severe head injuries from the multiple blows of the axe, but managed to survive. And this is a really interesting point because a lot of these people survive.
That's why... the Axeman is probably one of the worst serial killers in history. Apparently, they didn't make axes like they do now. Back then, it was more of a blunt object, and now they make them way sharper.
I know, but a lot of these people, from one blow, they were asleep, right? From one blow, they were unconscious. Well, I guess they...
So they went from... they went from being unconscious to being unconscious.
Exactly.
In a different way.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I just had the worst nightmare.
Right.
I was attacked. And then, why is my head hurt so much?
Yeah. So, he could have, like, they were unconscious, and some of these people lived alone, and he still left, which means that I think he just wanted to get that one smack in. Like, he just wanted to...
he wanted to get that one smack
in. He just wanted, like, one more axe like, smack. But he'd get that smack in, and then he'd leave, and... except for the people he slit their throat. But most of the time, he seemed to hit them once and leave. And if they died, they died. But a lot of them didn't.
And it's just weird. It's like if he wanted to kill these people, he could have. It seems like he wanted to injure people and sometimes kill them. The killing part was part of it, but it wasn't his main goal. It was just to fuck people up.
Yeah.
And that one couple that got razored on their throats, that
Maggio.
That razor belonged to one of them. There was a barber in the family nearby, and that he had brought the razor home to file it down because it had a nick in it, nick on the razor.
Mm.
And the fucking Axeman found that razor in their house and used it on.
So that's unfortunate.
It is.
So that was on August 10th, and then about a month later, on September 3rd, 1919, we have Sarah Lauman. Location, South Saratoga Street. Sarah Lauman was attacked while sleeping in her bedroom. Neighbors came to check on her and found her lying in bed, covered in blood. Though she suffered from a brain concussion and was missing several teeth, she managed to survive as well. So, I really don't think killing people was this guy's goal. I think he just wanted to bop some heads with some axes and call it a day.
Or he was so bad at judging if he killed someone or not. Like, if you had been bonked on the head with an axe, but you're still moving around, he'd probably keep bonking you until you stop.
Bonked just doesn't cover the gravity of getting hit with an axe.
Keep whacking you until, like, you stopped moving.
If you get booped in the head with an axe.
Are we going boppity boopity with this guy? Seriously. He's boppity booping people.
Yeah, he's boppity booping the Italian people, and that's not cool.
That's not good, no. Yeah, it crosses the line in many levels.
So, that happened.
God, that's fucked.
That was September 3rd, and then Mike Pepitone is the last guy. And like this one was actually a big a big gap. So that one was on September. This one was about 2 months later. So not a huge gap, I guess, but longer than
October.
than his MO, right?
Last one is this one you're talking about is in October, right?
Yes, October 27th, right before Halloween. It's kind of like a Halloween story. 1919. Location, Upper Line Street. Mike Pepitone, a grocer.
Mike Pepitone.
He was attacked in his bedroom. He was struck with an axe repeatedly and killed.
Why you hit me? Oh, fuck. He was killed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just forget everything I said. Yeah, I thought I was saying that like he survived, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Pepitone.
Pepitone's wife, who was also in the house, heard a noise and saw... I said that. She saw...
They got Harry Potter over here.
She heard a noise and saw a large axe-wielding man fleeing the scene. The brutality of this attack whipped up the city into a panic. But just as suddenly as the killings began, they stopped completely.
That's scary. So why do you think this guy got killed? Because his name was Pepitone.
He was Italian and he owned a grocery store. And that seems to be... all you need to get booped and bopped.
I know, but a lot of them got booped, but they didn't get bopped. So why makes this guy different? Why did he have to...
One hit wasn't... Oh, wait. Repeatedly killed.
Yeah, he really didn't like this guy.
I don't know. Maybe he sold him some bad stuff.
Tomatoes.
Yeah. So one thing that's interesting... Well, several things that are interesting is that the method of attack is the same. Blows from an axe, right? And the victims, mostly grocers or their families, they were attacked with things he found inside, as we mentioned. The motive behind the Axeman's crimes remains a mystery, kind of. I would say it's kind of obvious that he's racist. You know, he doesn't like Italian immigrants.
I think that's what he mostly went after, as Italian.
Right. And... you know what's interesting is I think that is also supported by the fact that he was said to be mulatto, so mixed race, because the reason I say that is because Italians in New Orleans were kind of despised by other immigrants there and even African Americans. And so it almost makes sense because it's like you have these groups that are heavily discriminated against, and rather than like teaming up and being like, okay, we're in this together, we're all treated like shit, they actually, what that did is it created animosity towards the other ones. So they almost like hated the other ones because of the opportunities they got or the respect they were afforded, or even if they were less respected, they tried to like go over to the white side and be like, yeah, those no good, I think they called Italians in those days black doggos.
Yeah, they also called them white N-words.
Really?
Yeah, which is super, I mean, like, it doesn't make any sense.
So there was a lot of that, and...
yeah, a lot of racial tension. All kinds of tension, man. I mean, I think that's what maybe contributed to the Axeman's motives. Was he was a little unhinged, and maybe he envisioned himself as like sort of eradicating Sicilians, doing good for New Orleans, because Italians were so despised then.
Yeah, even though a lot of them were really hard workers.
Yeah, which is weird. They were replacing African American workers with Italians.
So when Italians came here, they didn't understand the social hierarchy that was in the United States. So when they were asked to work in the fields with African Americans, they actually accepted because they didn't find anything shameful about being working alongside them. Whereas a lot of other races would have been like, no, who understood the social hierarchies? But they did. And so you'd think this would like help them, but in fact, actually it made things a lot worse, because then white people were like, wow, they'll work in the fields with African Americans. They're no better than them.
Yeah. It's just a fucked up scenario. Just, you know, it happened like right after, or soon after the Civil War, the South lost, and they're obviously really damaged at that time. So they're trying to find ways to get around the new constitutional laws on them with slavery. So I think it created this tension to find some other minority to pick on.
Right.
And it just so happened to be the Italians.
Right. And New Orleans is such a diverse cultural place that there's going to be a lot of friction because you have so many different people in close contact with each other.
Yeah.
And trading and doing business with each other. So you're going to have these frictions that come up, and some of these frictions were explosive.
Yes, they were. But a majority of the anti-Italianism was directed at Sicilians. They were associated with crime and the lower darker parts of town and shady dealings and gangsters.
And the mafia, which the Sicilian mafia, I think, might have added to that stereotype a little bit, because you did have organized crime happening in New Orleans that was related to the mafia.
Yeah.
And so people were like, hey, Italians are no good. They're part of the mafia.
They're no good.
Boopity boppity. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to boopity bop out of here. But yeah, I think there were some Sicilians that actually were doing the shady shit. And there was, I think, Sicilian gangsters.
But there's whatever. Like white people that do shady shit there.
Yeah.
Too,
like everybody does say shady shit. It doesn't matter. You know, but.
So.
Go ahead.
Rounding it out. The axe
rounding it up and out.
The axeman's identity was never discovered, and despite the extensive investigations and public fear, everything around the killings was just never solved.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating, especially for the Italian families too that suffered from it.
Right, like some people left behind like 6 kids when they died, you know, so.
Yeah, they left mine. A whole chain of grocery stores, man.
Jeez. Dark, man.
Walmart.
Oh my gosh, man. You know what? That's my conspiracy theory. Walmart was the killer. And he was taking out the competition.
He was the Axeman.
Setting up his empire.
Yeah. That's the good theory, man. The Axeman could have literally just been a competitor to the grocery stores.
Yeah.
He could have even been Italian himself. Just taking out the comp, axing the competition.
Axing out the comp.
I didn't mean it. Literally, Johnny. Johnny.
Oh, I didn't know.
I don't know. I think it's possible that the Axeman, the killing stopped because the Axeman, like, inadvertently got killed by police or something, died, or just moved and kept doing his thing in a different state, and we'll never know.
Like, was there an Axeman in Idaho? Maybe.
Probably Axeman in every fucking state.
Probably.
City.
Could be an Axeman here. So, on that note, I just want to say thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of Best Worst Case Scenario Podcast.
BWCS.
I'm your host, Mayan.
I'm your host, Dana.
And it has been a pleasure taking you on this gory but factual and historical ride.
Yes.
In the South.
It is a mystery. We unraveled, but we did not solve.
Yeah, and eventually I'll get Dana back to normal.
Oh, what are you talking about, kidding, man?
I'm joking.
I'm fine right where I am.
If you guys like the episode, remember to like and subscribe.
Yes, and if you're listening on Spotify, make sure to rate the show.
Yeah.
And share it with all your friends.
Definitely.
And family.
Everyone.
Everyone you know. Tell them that we're coming.
And if you really enjoyed the show, consider checking out our Patreon, where you can become a member and help support the podcast at work. And if you guys have any other topics that you find interesting that you want to send our way, we always love to find new interesting things, whether they're historical, conspiracy theories, just weird, whatever you got. Send them our way.
And if you got any information on the Axeman or murders, any murders surrounding the Axeman, let us know.
Yeah, and we'll take that to the police.
And we'll take that to the police and fucking turn and
we'll
you in.
Fucking arrest
we'll
you.
Arrest your whole family.
And the other thing is, if you don't have any or any like ideas, but you just want to like drop us a line, you know, say hi, whatever. Yeah. We love to hear from you guys.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening on.
Be safe, guys. And good night.